Hi, this is Stuart Weems and welcome to the Investopoly podcast. My goal is to share easy to understand evidence-based holistic insights to help you master the game of building wealth. And in this episode, I'd like to record part two, obviously the first part of this series, which is aimed at answering the question, should you sell an underperforming apartment? And in last week's episode, which is episode 294, I talked about the factors that have contributed towards the underperformance of apartments versus houses in most capital cities, but my conversation was particularly aimed at Melbourne, Brisbane and Sydney, and in particular Melbourne. And I talked about the factors that contributed to that 13 to 14 year period of underperformance and discussed some of the factors that could contribute towards the beginning of a new growth cycle in the coming couple of years. We don't really know when that's going to occur, which is what I sort of spoke about. In part two today, what I'd like to do is take you through a step-by-step process to work out if you do have an underperforming apartment, how should you divest of it or should you hang on and keep it and hope that the investment returns will improve? So I guess the first question we need to consider is when will the market start turning around? Well, we can see from the chart that I shared last week that Brisbane apartment prices have already started to improve, you know, after a long period of very, very poor performance. So over the period 2021 to 2023, last couple of years, the median apartment price has increased by 9%. So that's a positive sign for that market. And that market's been in the doldrums for a long period of time. So maybe that will continue to improve. Sydney's apartments are the cheapest they are relative to houses in all capital cities. So really, Sydney apartments look like they're pretty good value just based on at least that one metrics. And when you look at the long-term growth rate, you know, since 1980, apartment prices have increased by 6.3%. So that doesn't really suggest that market is overcooked. In fact, it probably suggests that, you know, apartments are primed for a bit of growth moving forward. When that is likely to occur is unknown, but they look to be sort of attractively priced. Melbourne, unfortunately, though, has some real challenges. And the first one is that the growth in apartment prices between 1980 and 2010 was 9.2%, which is high. And what it's doing is still elevating the long-term growth. So the total growth, even the fact that we've had 13 years of very low to no growth, the average growth rate since 1980 through to 2023 is 7.1%. It's still elevated. It's still too high as a result of that three-decade period of over 9% capital growth. And so that mean reversion hasn't really played out yet. And I estimate that we'd probably need another 5 to 7 years of growth around 2.6%. So the same sort of growth that's happened over the last 13 years for it to revert to a long-term growth rate of 6.5%, which is kind of what you would really like to see to suggest that a market is reasonably priced from a long-term trend perspective. So if you look at that mean reversion case, you could argue maybe we should expect another 5 years of flat growth in Melbourne before we start to see a new growth cycle. The second concern is the increase in land tax in Victoria, which has really been aimed at people that don't have a huge amount of land value. So that is apartment owners. And the tax-free threshold has been reduced to 50,000, 25 or 50,000. I can't remember off the top of my head. And I've got a link to a post I did on LinkedIn, which showed that if you're going to invest in an apartment anywhere in Australia, it's probably not going to be Melbourne because you're going to pay land tax, whereas most other jurisdictions, you're not going to pay any land tax. And so that doesn't really help either the rental crisis or attracting investors to Melbourne. And I think that could weigh on the market over the next couple of years as well. So if we have a look at Brisbane, it's already started to recover. Sydney could possibly recover and start seeing some apartment growth rates pretty soon. Median house prices twice as expensive as apartments, so that looks pretty good. Melbourne, unfortunately, I think it's reasonable to expect we're not going to see a major recovery possibly in the next 3 to 5 years. We might have to wait that long for us to enter into a new growth cycle. So there's a couple of things you need to really think about if you're contemplating divesting of a property. You know, the first thing you really need to ask yourself is, can you afford to wait? Because we know all markets move in cycles. We know that the apartment market, it's not broken. It will recover. and we will get a period of strong growth. It always happens. A period of strong growth follows a flat cycle. The only question is, how long will the flat cycle last? Well, will it last another 10 years? Look, I think it's very unlikely it's going to last another 10 years. Could last another 5. So it's really just about, do you have the time and patience to hang on? Can you afford to wait? Because if you can afford to wait and you've got a good quality asset, I'll take you through the questions that you need to ask yourself to determine that in a second. But if you can afford to wait, then it'd be silly to sell now, because you've owned for a period of time, you've got very little capital growth. No point selling now and moving on when you could be just a few extra years and then you start to enjoy that capital growth. However, if you're in a financial position where you can't afford zero returns over the next 5 years, you know, if you don't have any other assets, investment assets, you're going to retire soon, you know, that opportunity cost is just too high for you, well, then you need to really think about that. The second thing to contemplate is that it's not a costless exercise to divest of a property. You know, you might have to make improvements to that asset just to make sure it's marketable. You're going to have to pay for selling costs, so advertising, agent fees, those sorts of things. And you might even have to pay capital gains tax, albeit you might not have generated a huge capital gain, but if you've claimed depreciation over the years, that actually reduces your cost base. And so in that situation, you might end up paying some capital gains tax. And then if you go to reinvest those monies in the property market, well, of course, you're going to pay stamp duty and maybe buy agent fees again and so forth. So it's a pretty costly exercise to divest and replace an asset. Not talking you out of it, just something that you really need to contemplate. And so if you can have the patience to wait the time for that market to recover, and this is true with apartments in Melbourne, but it's true really with any investment that moves in cycles, patience is a really important ingredient to successful investing. Just close your eyes, don't look at the returns, make sure you make an initially a really fundamentally sound decision and then stick with that decision for many, many decades. And that's how patient investors are rewarded. Now, I'm going to get into the four questions that you need to ask yourself in a second to determine whether you should hold or sell. But before I do that, I think it's really important to understand that not all apartments are going to be equal in terms of quality, and therefore the returns that you're going to get from different apartments will vary. So when looking at long-term median house growth prices, so this is for houses, we can see we observe over very long periods of time, houses have grown 7.5% to 8%. Let's call it sort of 7.5%. That's what we're going to get for houses. Now, you're going to get a lower capital growth rate typically for apartments because they have a smaller land value component. Again, that's just a generalization, but it's reasonable. Now, you're going to get some apartments will outperform houses, of course. There's always exceptions that prove the rule. But if we're expecting 7.5% from houses, then maybe we should expect somewhere between 6% and 7% for apartments. You know, over very long periods of time, that's probably what we should get. If we've got sort of older style two-bedroom apartment, they tend to have a higher land value component. You know, they tend to be on a block of maybe 6 on a pretty large block of 800 square meters or something like that. Those sort of assets tend to have a larger land value. So maybe you should expect, say, 6.5% to 7%. So you're sort of towards the upper end of that range. Whereas if you've got a one-bedroom apartment, maybe in a less desirable area, still investment grade, but relatively small, well, maybe you're going to be towards the lower end or even under the range. So maybe 5.5% to 6% in terms of long-term capital growth. You know, you can't expect a very basic one-bedroom apartment, albeit maybe regarded to be investment grade, to perform just as well as a house or a two-bedroom apartment. Of course, so we want to be realistic, I guess, when looking at performance and returns to make sure that we're being realistic about the asset that we have, the quality of that asset, and therefore the future expected returns. Now, of course, if your apartment is not investment grade, you know, if it's in a new build tower of 200 different apartments, well, then your expected returns probably closer to sort of 2 to 3%, really just moving in line with inflation at best, but a lot of those assets actually depreciate in value over time. Okay, so as promised, what I've done is drawn up a flow chart, which you'll see on the blog on the website, of course, the link's in the show notes. A flow chart, so take you through four questions that you should ask yourself to determine whether you should hang on to your apartment or divest of it. Okay, so the first question is your apartment a high quality apartment? And of course, course, this is a very subjective question, but some of the objective factors you could consider, so is number of bedrooms, and also if there's a sort of separate study area or nook, particularly given the increased popularity of working from home. Two-bedroom apartments, I think, will continue to outperform one-bedroom apartments, and a two-bedroom with a study is even more attractive because, again, two people can share that accommodation, and then one of them at least can work from home or share working from home on different days, whereas a one-bedroom apartment doesn't really lend itself necessarily to working from home. The next thing is attributable land value. So again, you know, if you've got a property on a high-rise with 200 other apartments, your attributable land value is tiny, negligible, whereas if there's just four apartments on the block and it's a pretty large block in a good location, quiet street, etc., then your land value is probably going to be high. And then location is another consideration. You know, is it in a blue chip suburb, close to transport, shops, in a quiet street, etc., etc., all the sorts of things I talk about. So you've got to make a subjective analysis of the quality of the asset that you hold. If it ticks all the boxes and you think, you know, well, no property ticks all the boxes, but if it ticks a lot of the boxes and your gut feeling is, look, it's a pretty good asset, then you can probably answer yes to this. If it's a no, well, maybe move on to question two. And question two is, can you afford to reinvest in a higher quality asset? So the question is, if you sold this underperforming apartment, what asset could you buy as a replacement? If you could buy a much, much, much better asset, maybe because your financial position has greatly improved since you originally purchased the apartment. You know, sometimes people buy apartments when their incomes are relatively low, they're young, they're starting a career, etc. Maybe 10 years down the track, they're in a much better position from an investment perspective. So if you could, for example, replace that apartment with a villa unit or a house, well, then you're probably going to level up in terms of quality substantially. And then if you've answered no to question one, which is it's a poor quality asset, then replacing it with a much higher quality asset is a good thing to do. However, if, you know, borrowing capacity is really tight at the moment, of course, interest rates are higher. So if you can't afford to replace the asset, then you're going to have to move on to question three, which I'll talk about in a second. Given the transactional costs associated with selling, you'd want to materially increase the quality of the asset, the replacement asset. So if it's like, look, I can sell this one bedroom and maybe I can buy a slightly larger one bedroom apartment, that's not going to do it. I wouldn't take the risk, you know, associated with all the transactional costs. Okay, question three then is, can you make cosmetic improvements to the asset? So making improvements like upgrades to the kitchen and bathroom, replacing floor coverings, window coverings, fresh paint, a coat, all those sorts of things will do two things. Will obviously enhance the rental income. And then secondly, it'll make sure that you're maintaining that property to a good level and therefore you are really positioning it to enjoy as much capital growth as possible, because once you put it on the market, it's going to be an attractive asset to buy compared to something that is in a state of disrepair or, you know, is worn and torn a lot more. So if now we're at question three, so it means you've answered, you've decided that it's not a high quality asset, but you can't replace it with something that's much higher quality, then really what you've got to do is hang on to that asset and try and extract as much return as possible. And so making some tax deductible improvements, of course you can depreciate these improvements, that might help you do that. Now, if you can't make those improvements, then the final question might be, consider selling the asset with all the other owners. A handful of clients be able to do this successfully. It's challenging because you've got a lot of people in the process. But for example, if you own one of six, you know, there's five other owners on the block, potentially you can get together all six owners and sell it to a developer. And the intrinsic underlying land value is typically high quality. It's not going to work in every situation, but that could be a way of divesting of an asset and maximizing its value. If you answer no to all those questions, so it's not a good quality asset, you can't afford to replace it with a higher quality asset, you can't do any cosmetic renovations, and you can't sell the whole block to a developer, then maybe you might be better off divesting of that asset and putting your money somewhere else because the opportunity cost might be too high. Now, of course, I've got to say or remind you that this is just general advice, right? This is the general approach that I would take. Please don't follow the approach verbatim and decide, okay, well, I answered all these four questions, I'm selling the asset. Of course, you need to get some specific advice. There might be extenuating circumstances. There's always exceptions that prove the rule, you know, so you might have to, you know, speak to a buyer's agent that you trust, you know, in terms of analyzing or assessing the quality of the asset. You might need to speak to your accountant about, you know, what are the tax considerations and concerns associated with selling, and maybe the timing also. You might need to speak to your mortgage broker just to assess your sort of borrowing capacity in terms of replacing the asset. There's a few people that you might have a conversation with and that you should have a conversation with. Don't just follow the advice in this podcast, but hopefully that sort of theory or theoretical approach to this sort of question helps people kind of understand whether they should just hold on and make whatever improvements they can to the asset and have the patience to wait for the market to recover, because it will eventually recover, or are they better off, you know, selling and moving on? So as always, thanks very much for listening. Please share this two-part episode with anyone that you think might get some value of it. If you know someone else that has an underperforming apartment that's been complaining about it, maybe they would enjoy listening to it. And until next week, bye for now.